morning, everybody. My name is Maxim van Gisbergen. As you probably can hear from my accent, I'm not from the UK, I'm from Holland. I'm with the headquarters of Swets. My role is I'm the manager of business development, which basically means that I'm looking after the development of new products and services. And today I'm going to talk about a new service that we're going to develop that's actually, I think, in the heart of the topic of today, collection development. So yeah, it's a great conference to be in. So I'd like to thank the UKAG for this speaking opportunity. The organization has asked me two things. First is not to be too commercial. And the second is to make it of interest to both publishers and librarians. Related being commercial, I promise I won't, for the simple reason that I have nothing to sell. What I'm going to talk about today is basically our strategy and our vision. And it's early stages, and it's, at least I think it's exciting. So to me, it's actually the first time that we're going to talk about this. So I'd really like to start this see this as a starting point for discussion. So I'd really like you to come over to me afterwards and let me know what you think. I think we have an ambitious strategy. We don't know for sure that it will work. That is what makes it exciting, I think. But it's definitely something that we're going to pursue. We're going to try and add value in a new way to our customers. So I'm not going to be commercial. I'm going to make it of interest to publishers as well, I hope. Although I have to be honest, the majority of the presentation will be aimed at librarians and specifically collection development people. But I will touch upon ideas that we have for publishers at the end of the presentation. So publishers, please don't fall asleep yet. So with that introduction, I'd like to dive into the content. I'd like to first paint a general picture of basically the world that we live in, especially around collection development. Some of the speakers have already touched upon some of these topics, so I'd like to quickly address them. First of all, and of course this is not new, this has been going on for quite a while now, it's digitization of content, which of course opens up a lot of new business models, lots of new license models, which in one hand is good, on the other hand of course it also makes the business of collection development more complicated. Then of course there's open access. There's a whole lot more content available right now, and I think also when thinking of collection development, it's also thinking of alternatives. To what extent is this specific topic well covered in open access content, and to what extent is this certain publication already available through open access? So it also addresses some new questions. Then on the positive side, there's a standardization. If you look at successful initiatives like Counter, but now also ORCID is starting up. I think it's a promising development that will make it easier to also pull data together and to utilize data sets from different sources and make sense of it. Of course, economic recession. I think it hits librarians in a couple of ways. First of all, the pressure on the resource budgets themselves. But also the effects it can have on staff, meaning we're going in, the world is becoming more complex, but basically there are less people that actually can have to handle that complexity, which is a major challenge. On the other hand, you can say social media in general, Twitter, Facebook, and the rise of old metrics. But also initiatives like Mendeley, meaning researchers are discovering content in a new way, are sharing content in a new way, and actually are the whole process of research collaboration is starting to change. And it also opens up opportunities for librarians to actually get a new view of what your users, your researchers, of your institution care about. And I think there's an opportunity to learn from that and to improve the quality of your collection development decisions. Then, generically, there is a bigger focus on data or metrics. I think almost all the letters in the alphabet have been used up for all the metrics that there are, with the H index, etc. I think new indices are being developed. But I also think that it shows that there is an increasing demand to make data-based decisions. I've attended Charleston conference last week, and actually this came out as one of the big themes, that almost in all of the presentations, the word evidence-based or data-based decisions came up. It's clearly a trend that it's not enough to say this is important. You have to support that claim, and preferably based on hard data. So all in all, I think if you look at the amount of data, the focus on making sense of that data has become bigger. But on the positive side, there's also, on the technology side, there is now technology that can support that can support extracting value from structured and unstructured data, and support the decision-making process. And you see that already in a lot of corporate sectors, that big data is already being utilized to improve the quality of the decision-making. And the question that we have been asking ourselves within SWEDS is, can we use big data to support the decision-making process within collection development? We think there are opportunities for that, and obviously I'm going to explain the opportunities that we see. And it also means basically providing new tools, because some of the opportunities, Excel, which is, I think, for many librarians still the main tool for analysis, will not be able to support all of the data analysis that is needed. So basically, the vision for collection development support is to help you, and with you we mean librarians, to derive actionable insights from more data than probably that's being utilized today, to make evidence-based decisions in less time, leading to a higher return on investment, which some indeed might consider a dirty word, but what I really mean is metrics like the price per use, etc. So that's really, let me move on to the next slide, because I think the explanation of this will come in the next slides. Before I want to expand on basically our strategy and the ideas that we have to utilize data to support the decision-making process, I would like to quickly touch upon the current products that we have that support collection development. Not as a sales pitch, but just as a means to show you where we're coming from. First product is Selection Support. Basically, this is a service which gathers user statistics, normalizes the data, and consolidates it on one platform. And we've recently added some other metrics like the Shimago Impact Factor, and allow you to do some, basic analysis online. But most of the analysis is done actually by an export function, where most of the analysis is done via Excel. On the other hand, we have Mendeley Institutional Edition, which provides a view for librarians onto what's happening within your institution, within your users, how are they making use of Mendeley, what content are they reading, what content are they annotating, citing, sharing, what journals are they publishing in, etc. So as I stated earlier, it's an opportunity to look beyond what's happening within the library to actually what's happening within our user community. And of course, there's an opportunity to then have a sort of a Venn diagram to say, this is actually what's being supported by the library, this is what's being used by our library community, and hopefully the overlap is quite big, but you can also see where there's a missing overlap. So here you can see where full text is made available, and what journals are actually very popular within the Mendeley user community of your institutions, but are not, full text is not available. So it gives a clear indication what content apparently is required. So then we thought about what data actually is needed to support collection development decisions. This is a very simplified overview. I'm sure there's other data that might be of relevance, but I think these are the main ones. Of course, there's quality. You can look at things like impact factor, perhaps old metrics, do these lists, perhaps even a comparison with the holdings of other institutions. You could say price. Clearly, that plays a role in the collection development. And clearly, it's a factor. But I would say probably it's more of a dissatisfier than a selection criteria in itself. Usage. I think first people think of the online usage stats, the counter stats. But of course, you can also look at circulation data, interlibrary loan, document delivery data, etc. Because obviously, that also tells a story what kind of content is required. Then obviously you don't want to buy content you already have, so you need the availability data. Is it already purchased or perhaps an older edition? The main thing that, for many of these things, although they are coming from different sources and it might be hard to actually export the data and make it available for analysis, there is hard data. There is there's quantifiable data on all of these factors. But the main thing is relevancy. Is this publication, ebook, journal, database, big deal? Does it support the current needs of our researchers? And that's why I liked what Jill Taylor-Rowe mentioned. Like, that's actually sort of the success factor. Success should be the success metric of collection development. Do we make available the content that supports the current needs of the researchers? If you look at how do you obtain data on that, it's mostly qualitative input. You know, there's collection development committees, there's library liaisons, there's committees, there's a lot of requests for content, but it's mostly qualitative input, which is also mostly provided by a minority of the users. And of course, it's labor intensive to collect that and to make sense of that. So we've asked ourselves whether we can turn this factor, relevancy, into a metric. Then first we looked at citation data and the opportunities that that has. This is an overview. You might have seen pictures like this. This comes from Leiden University, or actually the Center for Science and Technology Studies. It's one of the renowned bodies involved in citation analysis. So basically, they look at the publications that are published by a certain university and look at the subject domains that these publications are covering, and then make a schematic overview of the research focus of a certain institution. So each bubble stands for a subject domain. The larger the bubble, the more publications from this university. Red means that these publications are cited a lot, so a high impact factor for this faculty or for this topic. And blue means it's neutral. I think gray means that it's lower than average. And the closer the bubbles are to, the closer they are to each other, the more similar they are. So basically, this is a overview of the current research focus based on, recent publications. So if you look at this university, rheumatology, which is on the top, it's big, it's quite red. So you expect, if you look at the library holdings, but also if you look at the investments in content of this specific university library, that rheumatology would be quite prominent. And you would expect for some of the smaller bubbles that it would be in somewhat in relationship with that. So we, what we would like to add is basically another visualization of the library holdings or the library investments, and then to see where there's then match basically these two pictures together, saying where is a relative overspend if you look at the current research focus, and where is a relative underspend, which is sort of the basis for further explorations. There might be very good reasons why there seems to be an overspend or there seems to be an underspend, but actually there's not, but it's at least triggers the right questions to address. So basically where we are heading. First of all, it's entering into the world of big data. What we want to do is really analyze a lot of data. We want to take it step by step, but we want to involve a lot of data sets, all the data sets that are relevant to make good collection development decisions. So this could be, in the beginning, it's mostly openly available data. You can think of journal metrics, citation data. Obviously, it starts with metadata of the content itself, but you could also think of licensed data sets, like indeed duties, and at the end also the opportunity for institutions, for libraries to open up their own data and to analyze based on that data. The main point is that we want to provide recommendations. So we don't want to just present the data in an easy way. That means easy to analyze the data. We also want to provide concrete recommendations on what content to purchase, cancel, renew based on the data that we have available. There are some really cutting edge technology which supports that, and to me this is a key part of the strategy, so I'd like to explain a little bit more what this means and how we're going to make sense of the data and how we're going to think we can come up with high quality recommendations. So that's to be continued. Analytics. Currently, most of the analytics is actually done within Excel, which is fine, but not everybody has the time to create these reports. And actually, for more advanced analytics, it's actually becomes quite complex. So we want to provide an online tool where our users can go in and easily, drill down visually into and explore the questions that they want to explore. The insights that they derive from the analytics should be actionable, so at some way it should tie into the workflow of our users. So there should be integration from analytics to workflow. We want to support benchmarking, which means that we would like to enable our customers, libraries, to open up the data that they want to share to the other institutions that they want to share it with. And of course, if that's done the other way around, then it allows for benchmarking and for comparing yourselves with other peer groups. Also, we want to provide tailored reports. So the bulk of the service as we envision it will be to provide predefined reports, predefined dashboards, which will allow you to analyze the main questions, but we want to provide the opportunity to share also data that is institution specific to even improve the analysis further. So that's really our strategy and the way that we think we can add value to the collection development process. But I want to zoom in on one part of this slide, which is the recommendations part. Basically, at the heart of the recommendations engine, it's we want to create semantic fingerprints of content. So there's really, that means it's applying semantic technology, natural language processing, to really extract the value of the content. So really understand what subject this publication is about. So we're going to do that on a micro level, that is the article level or the chapter level. That's the main building block for the recommendation engine. then if you think about it, of the main players in the information industry, they all interact with this content in their own way, obviously. Publishers publish content, libraries purchase content, and researchers write content. So basically, if you have a semantic fingerprint of publications based on the interactions of these different players with that content, you can derive a fingerprint of these players. So obviously, if you are a researcher and you publish about oncology a lot, then basically your semantic fingerprint will have the stamp oncology on it. So basically, the more publications you write, the better the profile, the semantic profile of this researcher will be. So basically, that's the aim is to, based on the semantic fingerprints of the content, to create semantic fingerprints of basically any entity. It starts with the researchers, but if you aggregate that, you can make a semantic fingerprint of a faculty, because a faculty is a group of researchers, and obviously a research organization, because it's a group of departments or a group of researchers. And obviously you can do the same for publishers. A journal is nothing more than a group of articles, and a database is is also an aggregation of that content. So after you've defined a fingerprint for all of these entities, then the next thing you do is you have smart algorithms to compute the similarity or the relationship between these different entities. So if there's a journal that has a semantic profile on oncology, you can link it to researchers that have that same profile. Basically, our roadmap, and I would say currently we're at the second arrow. We data management is basically, we help our customers to gather the user statistics, etc. We really want to move to self-service analytics in a more ambitious way than we've done before, make it truly interactive. Then we want to provide the recommendations. At the end, we want to tie in other data sets like journal metrics into that system as well to create a true decision support tool. Obviously, we want to then tie it into the workflow, and at the end, you can envisage that we can actually create something like a performance measurement, where if you have a picture of your research focus and you have a picture of your library holdings and your library investments, then also you can compute basically the overlap between these two things, which would be a figure, a metric that defines to what extent you're in line with the current research focus. I promise to end up with how this relates to publishers. And the way we see it is basically with this technology, it would allow us to become a matchmaker between a user and a publication, where the starting point is that for a library, the users are a known. You know your students, you know your researchers, and the content is the unknown. You have to find the right content that matches the needs of your users. For a publisher, of course, it's the other way around. If you're in a sales and marketing department of a publisher, you know the journals and ebooks that you provide, and you have to find the right customers, the right users that have a need for that content. But in itself, it's the same matchmaking process. So we want to apply that, the same technology, in a new way, and basically helping publishers to create lead lists. What are the main institutions, what are the main faculties that should have a demand for my publications? This is the story. I want to end up with basically a request. We're in an early stage. This is something that we've decided upon, that this is the way we want to go. At least we want to try to make this work. We're going to start making prototypes actually next month. And we'd like to build this together with our users or with the library community. So I hope some of you are interested in the story, are interested in the plans. If you would like to provide feedback, or and that can be positive or negative, please approach me, and then I look forward to talking to you and together develop a good product. So thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Maxim. And before I go on to questions, what I really want to do now is not only say thank you to Maxim, but thanks to Richard, Jill and Robert. We've had a tremendous introduction and a tremendous morning. So it's been a bit like a music concert where we withhold the applause. But now I think it's time. It's the end of the symphony for the morning, and I think it's time for us to celebrate the speakers. So please, let's do that. I just also thought that picked up a number of really good themes, and just to show how contemporary we are, last month's Harvard Business Review, our whole issue on big data, I think it's actually well worth a read. I think the thing they say in here in one of the articles is it's actually a management issue of how do we make use of this data. But I thought there's lots going on. I'm constantly talking to organisations about this sort of thing. So do we have any questions before we break for lunch? Anybody want to ask Maxim or perhaps you want to talk to him in over lunch about cooperating and giving some feedback? Colin?
Again, I'll leave the challenge and quiet in the room. I'm intrigued by this concept of big data and semantic. I don't tend to understand really the technology behind it, but the example you gave of matching an oncology research with an oncology publication, are we not in danger of spending a lot of time and spending a lot of money on technology digging into big past data to answer the obvious question that we don't know the answer to?
It's a very simplified example. The semantic profile will be really, really precise. So that's actually the value that we think we can bring over the current, you know, subject classifications, where the categories are still pretty broad, where the research mostly is extremely specialized. You know, even the colleague next to you might not really understand the topic that you as researchers are addressing. So the big idea behind this is that we need a more granular understanding of exactly the topics that that the researcher is working on. And the oncology example is then badly phrased. Basically, the semantic fingerprint is a whole cloud of terms that describe your interest with a weight attached to it. And that profile is continuously, you know, in flux. With every publication that you have, it influences your semantic fingerprint. So it's a very detailed description of your interest profile. But thank you for asking that question.
Okay, well, got a question at the front.
Yeah, Richard Parsons from Dundee. Building on the idea, I like that we effectively track usage and what we purchase match with what we're using. Two comments really, or two points. One is this could be a useful defense against the big deals. So we find out what we're not using as well. And therefore we can libraries were a better place to describe what material we could lose. And the other one is just a comment that, of course, we're not necessarily easily capturing what the students are using in terms of what they might be referencing within their essays and articles. So I guess if you have any idea of any approaches to capture that, and then that builds a fuller picture of what we're using.
Yeah. Well, the basic idea is to not use usage statistics as the starting point for analysis what people need, because that's another approach. But basically, usage is based on the content that's already available. And it might be that there's content out there which has not been licensed, so it's not been made available, which actually has a better match. So the starting point is to take the subject that is supposed to be covered as a starting point. For students, you could say, or for new programs, you could say, you create a semantic fingerprint of the new program. You ask the professor that heads up a new program to give me 10 articles or 10 ebooks or write a big story about what this that's in the heart of this program. You create a semantic fingerprint of that new program, and then you match what holdings match this profile and what is the content that has a high match that's not in my holdings. For students, you could say you create a semantic fingerprint of all the courses and then look at the match with your holding. So basically, the concept of semantic fingerprint is that it can be based on any entity. And you can use that as a starting point.
Okay, well, we'll have last question from the front here.
My name is Megan Mazzal, I'm from Copyright Licensing Agency. I just had a question about actually how the semantic fingerprint would be constructed, what data would go into creating it, and where the sources for that would be. You just mentioned a professor, for example, might give you 10 articles when creating a program.
Yeah.
I was just curious, do you know at this point where that information would come from and how that information would be stored by yourselves? Or would that be retained within individual institutions or publishers?
Yeah. Basically, we need two sets of data. So first, we need to have, and in the beginning, an abstract will be sufficient of the publications that are published by a certain institution. So basically, this is the citation data. And on the other hand, we need to have a semantic fingerprint of the content that we can make available. Of course, there is a lot of content available, so we have to start small. Our idea is to start with ebooks, so we can build an ebook title recommender based on the publications and the subject domains that are covered by these publications for a certain institution. Because we already have a lot of metadata within ebooks, because we've got a lot of contract with both aggregators and publishers. So for us, that's a good starting point, and at the end we can expand on that and include other content data sets as well.